Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, wow, it's time for Stage Right. I never know what's going to play as the opening of this show. I didn't realize that I had New York, New York as the opening, but I guess I did. Hey, everybody, it's Robert Cooperman, and welcome to Stage Right. I'm back after a week's absence. We're here every Sunday at 1:30 till 2 p.m. It's a short time, but we got a lot of big things to talk about because we look at the world of the theater, drama and theater, and we say, where's the conservative voices? Why aren't they at the table? And what are we going to do about it? But I think this show lately is morphing into other things about theater and why I'm becoming more of a theater and playwriting snob. But anyway, I want to remind you that this show, every Sunday at 1:30, as I said, Stage Right, we are supported by our friends at Xander Business Group. They provide social media monitoring and online risk assessments for your child's online presence. So the internet never forgets, folks. I hope people are taking advantage of giving Xander Business Group a call and asking questions about how they can help you, parents and teachers of minor children, even if that includes teens under the age of 18. How can they help you figure out what those teens and minor children are doing on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all those other sites out there that expose them to a great deal of risk and threat? It's even more important now for parents to take a proactive role in protecting their child's safety and online reputation. So you'll want to contact Xander Business Group for more information. You give them a call at 760-865-9614. That's 760-865-9614. Or you can email them at info at Xander Business Group, all one word, and Xander's with an X, not a Z. Xander, X-A-N-D-E-R, businessgroup.com. If you want to call me, I'd love for you to call me. I'd love to chat with you. My number is 347-884-9659. That's number again, 347-884-9659. Well, you can always drop us a line on through my Gmail account. It's StageRightAudio1, StageRightAudio1. It's all one word. And you just write the number one, don't spell it out. StageRightAudio1@gmail.com. All right, I'm back from New York. That's why you heard the New York, New York theme playing. And why was I in New York? Well, if you've been following this show, you know that the reason I was in New York was to be a part of the New York New Works Theater Festival. The New York New Works Theater Festival is a competitive showcase. They started with 43 plays. Well, they started with hundreds of plays that people sent in to be part of this program, to be part of this festival. And the reason so many people are going to be interested in it is because the program, the festival entries are judged by Emmy winners, Tony winners, and producers, casting agents, and other prominent people in the arts. And in the theater scene in particular, theater and television, I guess, would be the two most represented areas. And so they got hundreds of submissions, and a play that I wrote called The Flower Stand. And by the way, these plays all had to be about 20 to 25 minutes in length. The Flower Stand was accepted for the showcase. And we had one opening performance on August 17th, and we were invited to move on to the semifinal round, and that's why I was in New York last weekend and why I couldn't do a show, because I was probably at this time getting ready to go to tech rehearsal and then to the actual performance on August 31st on a Monday. And you know, it's interesting because we all know, if we're in the theater, we all know that audiences are going to differ, right? And the beauty or terrifying nature of theater is that on any particular performance, you're going to have an audience that responds in a much different way than perhaps a previous audience will. And you know, if you tell a joke one way on Wednesday night and it gets a big laugh, you say, well, that's going to work. And you tell the joke the same way, or you say the line the same way on Thursday night, and you get nothing. You get crickets. Well, that's kind of what happened to us on August 31st. On our performance on the 17th, we had a very boisterous audience. Now, I don't write comedies. The Flower Stand is not necessarily a comedy, but it has some funny things in it. And the comedy, by the way, in it is all character-based. It's not jokes or stupid situations for the sake of getting an audience to chuckle. The stuff that I've got in this play genuinely come from the honest foibles of the character and not a forced joke for the audience to say, gee, what a clever playwright. So we got a lot of laughs. And the laughs are designed to build in this show, if there's going to be any, designed to build as the show goes on. At the recent performance, though, the audience was not nearly as boisterous. They were much more quiet. Now, I always tell this to my theater students when I'm teaching. I told this to my daughter, who was with me, and I know she understood, that it... You know, an audience is going to change from night to night. And just because this audience was not laughing the way the original performance audience was, does not mean that they were not enjoying it and does not mean that they didn't take meaning out of it. It's a little disappointing, right, when you're used to a performance where people are really loving it and showing that with their laughter, and then you've got what we encountered on the 31st, which was an audience that I truly think did enjoy the play, but just wasn't as verbose about it. And afterward, we did get people coming up to us, people I did not know. One of the directors of one of the other shows came over to me saying how much loved the play. So, you know, it may put us in a good situation to get into the finals. But here's the thing. They started with 43 shows. They whittled that down to 24. They now are going to choose 6. So it was one thing to, you know, knock out 20 plays but have 20-something left. Now they're going to knock out an additional, whatever 24 minus 6 is, what is it, 18? Yeah, 18. I'm not math, folks. They're going to knock out an additional 18 plays. So what's going to keep me alive? What's going to do me in? I don't know. You know, one of the things that they've decided on this at this festival is that the panelists and the producer of it has feedback for every show, notes for every show. And I have not gotten my notes. They were offered to me on the Sunday of the second tech. And the gentleman said to me, we haven't had a chance to talk about the notes. Would you like them? And I said, would you like them now or is this not a good time? And I said, you know what? I said, my head's just not in it right now. And he said, what's the matter? I said, no, nothing's the matter other than, you know, I just got into New York. Because I drove, I just got in, I just ran on a train, I had a quick bite to eat at my sister's house, got on a train, got here, brought all my stuff. I'm not thinking that, you know, right now I'm going to embrace that very well. And he said, oh, that's fine, I'm just wanting to help. But that makes me wonder a couple of things. One, is that going to be detrimental to me for not embracing the notes, whatever they are? And I'll be very honest with you folks, I'm just not interested in those notes. And the reason is because you can have 100 people in the room and 100 different versions of what should be done and 100 different sets of notes by people who know and people who don't know. By, you know, what we might call reader response, audiences just sitting there and making a gut reaction versus people who are supposedly in the know. And I feel as an author, as a playwright, that the only person who's going to know what's wrong with my play is me. And when I watch a show that I've written I will say, oh, that's a bad line. Oh, I don't like the way that looks. And I hear it, and that's what I'll correct. But I think I'm the guy who's going to have to make that call. So if, you know, Joe Schmo, who's one of the panelists, let's say, one of these Emmy winners, Tony winners, whatever, Joe Schmo says, here's what you should do to make this play better. Then what I've got is The Flower Stand by Robert Cooperman and Joe Schmo. Now, I could be wrong. You can call me and tell me I'm wrong. But I really think that, you know, that's my feeling. That's how I approach it as a writer. And I'm very passionate and also protective of my writing. So, you know, if I write an essay for a philosophy class, let's say, and you have comments about it, I'm fine with that. I've taken a lot of very good constructive criticism about how I was doing this show. I'm not a radio personality per se. And I got some great advice, and I accepted that graciously. But playwriting is just a different ballgame for me, and maybe you feel that way too in the writing that you've done. So that's number one. Is it going to, you know, is it going to work against me not to hear that? But the other point I have about this is a festival, not a workshop. And I understand that other groups, other playwrights have taken some of the critique information that they got from the panels and they've incorporated it and changed the play. Well, I don't think that's fair. I also don't think it's fair that there are musicals going up against what we call, at one time we used to call straight plays, because we can't call them that anymore. But I don't think that's fair either. That's not to say that the musical should not be a part of this, but Are they not judged by some different criteria than the traditional drama, even if that traditional drama is avant-garde in some way? I mean, isn't the whole idea of the musicality of it and the quality of the music and the quality of the lyrics and the quality of the singers, I mean, doesn't all that come into play, which would not in a play like The Flower Stand or most of the others that were mounted? So I have some concerns why I would not be chosen. And we'll see what happens. And I'll keep you posted. And you could follow this on Facebook, a Stage Right Facebook page. And I'll send out information. But I don't know. I don't know where we stand. We'll find out. And I'm hoping that today is Sunday. I'm hoping we'll find out by tomorrow night, as the long Labor Day weekend comes close. All right, so that made me think, because I did, you know, I was not able to watch the first show, which was a musical, but I saw a little bit of it from backstage and heard a lot of it from backstage and met the people involved. And then, as I was supposed to do, and I didn't see many of my fellow playwrights doing, who were able to, I then went out with my daughter and we watched the other four shows. And the first week that I was there, that the first performance, we watched the other three shows that came on after us. And I felt this was the right thing to do. You know, I don't know any of these playwrights or actors or any of them, but I felt it was my obligation to at least give them the courtesy of watching it. But I'll tell you what happened was the first show went on. It was a musical called Hotel California. And I may have mentioned this last week. I'll mention some of it again. Hotel California is a jukebox musical featuring the music of the Eagles. And from what I understand, just from casual eavesdropping, one of the Eagles, Glenn Frey, came to see the original production during the first week of Hotel California. But what the playwright did, the playwright stitched together the songs of the Eagles, One of These Nights, Those Shoes. I'm not sure I know Those Shoes. Anyway, Desperado, Peaceful, Easy Feeling, I Can't Tell You Why, Life in the Fast Lane, Best of My Love, which is a song I do love, and, of course, the title song, Hotel California. And she stitched these together with some kind of a plot. Now, that's, to me, that's what she's got to be judged on, because the playwriting is going to be those moments in between the songs. Otherwise, the songs are not hers. They're the Eagles. And they were played very well by the band that was on stage. And it was well done. But we have to judge this play by the incidentals and the plot in between. And the problem with Hotel California, seems to me, was that it was 30 minutes or 35 minutes, which is 10 minutes over the limit, which, according to the New York New Works Theater Festival, they will charge you if you go over. Why do I have the feeling they're not going to charge Hotel California? They are Hotel California in 30 minutes or 35 minutes with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 songs. Didn't leave a lot of time to work in a plot. But boy, did they throw in a plot. They threw in pregnancy, getting hit by a car and winding up in a coma in the hospital. By the way, you may want to guess that the song where he gets hit by the car is Life in the Fast Lane. Kind of makes sense. And some kind of an evil stepmother that apparently got booted out of Disney and was in the show. I did hear one of her lines while they were rehearsing and then also when they were actually doing the show. And it was something like, I have spoiled your you have not spoiled my evil plan. Wow. I said, wow, this is bad stuff. So not only did the playwright not have enough time to get anything developed with any believability, but what she did write was really kind of cliched, and it got me thinking about the other shows and some lousy playwriting. And I started this last week, but I want to pick it up today because I think, and I've said this on this show a number of times, I think that writing today, playwriting, I'll just say, stick with playwriting, but I would attribute that to television writing, is just piss poor. Just that bad. And I've been doing a lot of thinking about why that is. And the more I think about it, and the more I come up with different characteristics of lousy playwriting, the more I feel that they are very much left-wing. They focus on left-wing themes, and they have a left-wing point of view. And so I'd like to share with you some of my thoughts, and I'll share with you some information about some of the shows I saw that made the semifinal round now. Okay? So I mentioned last time about the use of one-word titles, and of the six shows that went on, there were two with one-word titles, Collapse and Passage. And then there was one called The Below. If you don't count The, then you got another one-word title. That's up to you. The others are Hotel California and Casey and Adam, and those, you know, they don't fit in that mold of the one-word title. So what's the story with the one-word title? For me, the one-word title is a title that the playwright gives and feels that it is so engorged with meaning. You know, it's hard to express, but meaning is part and parcel of this title. When you hear this title, normally the one word is a common word. When you hear this title, you think that you say to yourself, there's got to be some really deep meaning here. And that's what these playwrights are going for, this deep meaning. And I think they probably start with this deep meaning. And they tell you, this is what this is going to mean. I mean. It leaves very little to the audience imagination as to what things mean. This is the meaning. It's so meaningful. This meaning, that I contain it in a one-word title, and it could hardly contain itself. And who knows best what that meaning is? the playwright. And so for me, you can think this is far-fetched, that's okay. But for me, the playwright is serving as one of those elites who we see in the government, who know everything, who will tell us everything, who will guide our lives. And we, the sheep, nearly have to sit back and let them take care of everything. So in the world of playwriting, they'll take care of the meaning for us. And they'll start with their one-word titles. Maybe I'm crazy with that. I just think it's a very left-wing way of thinking. Wing, way, wang, wing, woo. Okay. Sitcom situations. Now, what we get a lot with playwrights today is metrosexuals in great angst. They're in great angst because they're not having sex. They're in great angst because they're having too much sex. They're in great angst because they want different sex. And that, too, to me, is a very left-wing mindset. It's all about sex. There's sex and then there's sex, folks. But this is all around that. This is not to say that right-wingers don't like sex. We like sexy. We like suggestive. That's what we like. We like to think about why it's sexy, what's sexy. But for them, it's all about the purveyance of sex. If you're not having sex, you're not doing, you're not living properly. Traditional sex, homosexual sex, sex with animals, sex with lampposts, doesn't matter. You've got to have sex. You've got to have sex. That's a new play I'm writing, new musical. All you really need is sex. Okay? All right. So that's what you get. And it's variations on a theme of sex. So what did I see on after my show was aired, the other shows? We had one show where a guy was dying. So was I in the audience. But this guy was dying. And he's in a wheelchair, and he's all bandaged up. And the girl who's there, the woman, young woman who's there to help him, transitioned to his assisted suicide, I think. She decides that the best thing for him before she could help him truly go is to take off her panties and spread her legs in front of him, which he is helpless, but he sat there moaning. But she's there with completely spread out. And I must say, she had a very nice wingspan. But she was there. I assume she showed him everything. I don't know. It wasn't toward us, but we saw her legs in the air. She had taken off her panties. There may have been something underneath. I don't know. But that was there. And I found it gratuitous. And I found it disgusting. And I found it unlinked to anything they were talking about. The good, bad news, however you look at it, is the show was so boring, I don't know what they were talking about anyway. And it was so doom and gloomy. Right. Then there was the show Casey and Adam. That was a cute little situation, a little sketch. She comes running in. They're going to move in together, of course. They're metrosexuals. They're going to move in together, of course. God forbid they should do anything like, you know, not practice this, not shack up before marriage. Can't have that. Very left wing, can have that. You know, they're going to move in. That's the way it is. And she comes in and she's a little nuts and she says she might be having an hysterical pregnancy. And he, of course, says, well, what's that? And she says, oh, a hysterical pregnancy is. And then she starts giving a dictionary definition. And so besides from the sex and the metrosexuals in agony, what you see a lot in bad playwriting is there's always a character who's slightly off. Sometimes more off, which, you know, insanity takes the place of character development these days. You don't have to develop a character if he or she is insane. This person, this Casey, I believe it was Casey, I think that's the woman, she was not insane, but she was a little off. And my point is that these characters always have some kind of esoteric, odd fact that the rest of us, A, do not know, and B, don't give a sugar about. Okay? But so today it was hysterical pregnancy. And of course, that led to all kinds of dumb jokes, you know, basic, silly jokes about pregnancy, illness, and all that stuff. I mean, just terribly unsophisticated. And that's another characteristic of the lousy playwright. You have limited characterizations. You have elements of farce, and there was in this play, because at one point the police were coming, but it may not have been the police. She may have just been playing a siren on her phone, yet it sounded like the police were outside. I mean, you really have to suspend your disbelief here. That's okay if you want to do it as a farce. So he decides that he's going to hide. They're going to hide in a box that they were unpacking because she's moving in with him. So he takes the box and he puts it over the two of them. It does not cover them. So it's a box with legs sticking out. Okay? Of course, the audience, oh, look, they're in a box. Well, clearly this playwright didn't think beyond or outside the box, because then what he had her do is be flatulent in the box. And of course, the yokels are rolling at this. I was, of course, disgusted as well. Oh, look at that. Yeah, she was flatulent in there. Okay, this is Saturday Night Live stuff, folks. It is garbage. And it's very left-wing, if you ask me. Okay? Another topic that I saw tons of, death and dying. I saw a lot of it in the original series. Then I saw it in the semifinals. When you don't have anything really good to say, have somebody die. Have somebody dying. Then the audience will feel sorry, and that will give you the meaning you so sorely lack. So we saw a show called Passage, one word title, with this dying guy, as I mentioned, and he was, you know, he was making a video of his last days, a la, there was a movie where Michael Keaton does that. I can't remember what it was called, years and years ago. Okay, that's fine. There's nothing new under the sun these days anyway. But, and then she spreads her legs for him, and then he dies, I guess, a happy man. I don't know. I was dying in the audience for other reasons. But it was another show called that mercifully did not make it to the later rounds. Au revoir. The woman is dying. Her daughter is crying. The woman can hear the daughter. The daughter can't hear the woman. The woman saying, help me, I'm dying. The doctor comes in a traditional white lab coat and a clipboard. That's what you need to be a doctor these days. And, you know, and the dialogue was terrible, and there were all kinds of last-minute complications. Talk about something on life support. But Death and Dying, big, big hits. Okay? Then one of the plays that did make it, La Gioconda. I may have mentioned this last time. La Gioconda is about these two women inmates. One is black, one is white. The black one is, you know, of course, grew up in the tough streets and watched her brother die, the usual. And the white one is certifiably nuts. Orange is the new black, is what most people thought of. And, of course, there was death and dying in that one, besides the whole long and boring monologue about the brother who died. But then the nut kills the black woman, just snaps her neck. I know I mentioned that. I got only about a minute and a half here, so let's go over a couple of other things that constitute lousy playwriting. What's my sexuality? Okay, they love it when they can bring on people who are questioning their sexuality. And we had a play in the first round called Two Princes, also mercifully did not move on. But Two Princes. And Two Princes was about a guy who wasn't sure of his sexuality. Who the hell cares about your sexuality? And I would say that the majority of the people on this planet, or at least in this country, are very comfortable with their sexuality. Okay? But, you know, that's a left-wing thing, too. You gotta have sex! Right? Cursing, and more cursing. Women shopping, women dating, and finally, pity me because I'm a minority. Pity me because I'm poor. Pity me because I'm mixed up sexually. Or pity me because I'm a victim. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll pick this up again next week. I want to look at some more things about how we are teaching theater to our children these days and college students. Robert Koopman here saying we will see you next week. We are exiting stage right.